हरि
The wives of the teacher who belong to the same caste must be treated as respectfully as the teacher. But those who belong to a different caste must be honored by rising and salutation. So always respect is there. Yes?
The last verse we did was 207.
207. Oh, okay. The son of the teacher who imparts instructions in his father's stead deserves the same honor as the teacher, whether younger or of equal age, or a student of the science of sacrifices or of other angas. Right, so in other words, one is also respectful to the senior students, you know, who are giving knowledge. In other words, seniority, because we're talking about education, means who has the knowledge. You know, so it doesn't matter if they're younger or of equal age. If they're imparting the knowledge, then respect is to be there.
Maharaj?
Yes.
When it says the son of the teacher, in this sense, can it refer to any of the disciples of the teacher who are giving instruction?
No, that would be the actual son, because then the other part, or a student of the science of sacrifices or other angas, because there's other students who are in there, but if they know it better than you, if they're giving instruction, then we'll take, because in the Gurukul you have the element is, because we think of it, there's a teacher, and then there's the students, and that's it, and that's all there is. But in the Vedic system, it depends upon how many students and this and that. But you had like Durvasa Muni, Vasishtha Muni; they had 10,000 students. So, Prabhupada mentions that he gives. There's one quote where Prabhupada says, "How is it one man is teaching hundreds of students?" He teaches the older, they teach the younger. So then let's say, you know, the typical thing of, you know, you're teaching 10 people, okay? So if he teaches 10, you know, the senior students, right? So that's 10 students. But now those 10 teach 10. That's 100, right? So that's two levels. If they each teach 10, that's 1,000. And if they each teach 10, that's 10,000. So in four levels, he only taught 10, but 10,000 students are learning. You know, so that's good arrangements. You know what I'm saying? But you see, as who's doing that? Durvasa, Vishishta. Vishishta is the Rajguru for the kings, right? You know, so Ramachandra, Dasarath, he was the Rajguru. So that means they know the sun, they know management, they know all these different things. They know what a king needs to do. But being a Brahmin, they don't do it. Right? So the idea then is that they are taking part in, if they have that capacity, they can go beyond. But otherwise, they're recommended. If you don't know, it's not based on your managerial ability. It's recommended you only take on 12 students. Right? That's the standard, is 12 students. Because 12 you can manage and without any problem. Right? Because there'll be a wide range of students. Generally, it's not that they're all coming at once. the modern concept, everybody's the same age, you know, like this, but here it's that somebody will come, and then after that, you know, next year someone else, after a few years someone else, like this. So then, you know, that range of 12 students may be quite broad, right? Does that make sense? So in that case, then there'll be some aspects where an older student is still showing something to the younger students. So it would still work that way, though it would be less formal, less arranged like that.
12 students, one graduates, then he takes another.
Yeah, basically like that. You know, it means the idea is 12, so it might be a few more, a few less, but 12 is like manageable. Like that, you know, because then 12 can, you know, be in your house. You know, it's just like the Brahmachari ashram. You know, it's as big as this little place here, but you know, there's 15 of them. You know, somehow or another it works. So, therefore, a veranda, you know, got this and that. Then 12 students can stay. So even if he has a simple facility, you know, he'll be able to arrange that. You know, as that. A student must not shampoo the limbs of his teacher's son, nor assist him in bathing, nor eat the remnants of his food, or wash his feet. Right, so even though he respects them like the teacher, means, in other words, in receiving instruction, someone's giving you what respect you would afford in the way of listening and trying to apply, that's what's given. You know, it's not that he gets the worship or the service, he gets the respect in the way of teaching in the classroom. Does that make sense? But he's not supposed to do these other personal services for him, right? Because otherwise then it may... One is he's a brahmachari also, right? So therefore he has his own vows and things like that. So you're not doing these things to try to please him and this way please the teacher and all that. That doesn't...
Maybe he shouldn't even receive these things. I mean, if he's a brahmachari...
Don't turn it this point. No. Now is that the focus is on the duty of a brahmachari student. So therefore, he doesn't do these kind of things. Yeah. Because, if you do these, then it'll be better than everyone's trying to... You don't want to start something. It's just everyone's there, everyone's studying like that. The wives of the teacher who belong to this... Okay, we just read that one. Okay, let him not perform for a wife of his teacher the offices of anointing her, assisting her during bath, shampooing her limbs, or arranging her hair. Right, so these kind of... He may do other services, but these kind of personal services he won't do. Yeah, so that's just in general, he won't do that. Right? Then the next one, a pupil who is full 20 years old and knows what is becoming and unbecoming shall not salute a young wife of his teacher by clasping her feet. Right? So in other words, before that, he may go up, touch her feet, this and that. But if he's 20 and he understands, you know, what's right and wrong in these kind of social elements, right? So it's both of those, right? In other words, if he understands, if he has a concept of the male and female interaction younger than that, then also he wouldn't. Or he might be older than 20 and not know. Mm. You know what I'm saying? That innocence is there. But the general thing is by that age you've kind of figured it out. Right? You know, you're observant enough to see what's going on around you. But otherwise, you know, they might not. So that's why both are mentioned.
So he should himself decide on this point in particular?
Should he himself decide? Means he knows these things, so he should be. And if not, then someone will tell him. Like that. You know, I mean, it'll be figured out very quickly. Like that. You know, because it's also mentioned, as Prabhupada says in the first canto, women have a sixth sense, so they can always tell. So if she notices it, then she'll mention it to the husband, you know, who's the teacher, and then he'll tell her. Like that. So it'll work out pretty quickly. Right. Okay, 2:13. It is the nature of women to seduce men in this world. For that reason, the wise are never unguarded in the company of females. So unguarded means that you're not aware of the situation you're in. So you're always very careful. like that. Because the point is the senses, if they just move on their own, then you're in trouble. So you always have to be able to control the senses, right? So that means then one always has to be aware of what you're dealing with, right? Probably fire and butter. The point is butter melts if it's near fire. So then you have to be very careful. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the duty of brahmacharis. Be careful. 2:14. For women are able to lead astray in this world not only a fool, but even a learned man, and to make him a slave of desire and anger. Right? Because the element of possession is there. So the aspect of possession means that someone must be in control. So if one's in control, then it doesn't matter who it is. Then, because that control means then that's in the position of desire, of prajumna. So that's where desire comes from, right? So facility is located there. Desire is there to increase that, right? So safety is there, but then there's gain. Gain then creates more safety, right? So that means then he'll be a slave of desire and anger, because he'll always be trying to create more facility and more security for the woman. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. When it works, he'll be elated, and when it doesn't, he'll be angry. Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, it's just how the principle works. So therefore, the intelligent man has to be aware of this and know how to deal so that he does not become entangled in this. Does that make sense? That's the whole idea. And as we've seen before, what we're discussing in the Vedanta, is only by being Krishna conscious can you really do that. Means people do, and they'll maintain all good qualities, but it's not that they don't have material desire. It just may be that material desire is a much more elevated position. Right? You know, so they'll follow all the good qualities, so they'll do everything perfectly here because they want something on a higher platform. They want to go to the heavenly planets or merge into the Brahman or like that. Still immaterial. You know, so they're not free from desire and anger. It's just much more refined, much more elevated. Right? So, but we're not interested in just the good qualities of sense control and being acting with dignity. It's a matter of being Krishna conscious, right? And if you're Krishna conscious, then whatever you're doing is for Krishna. And being for Krishna, that's appropriate. Right? So only the devotee can actually do it. You understand? So whenever you're dealing with yama and niyama, what you should do and what you shouldn't do, right? What you should do is the encouraging thing. What you shouldn't do is because it gets in the way of what you should do. Does that make sense? So it's always very important to be able to take it back to that. So we're not leaving it at, oh, this is bad on its own. No, it's only bad because it gets in the way of what's good. Mm-hmm. You understand? So if you're practicing what's proper, then you won't be doing what's improper. Mm-hmm. But just to make sure, because the mind's very clever, then what's right and what's wrong is both defined. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, we might be doing what's right, but then there's fine points in there, and we might be also doing something that's wrong. You know what I'm saying? Is that? Yeah? Okay. One should not sit in a lonely place with one's mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are powerful and master even a learned man. The same is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 9:19-17, where it is stated. Matra svastra duhritava navivikthasano bhavet balavan indriya gramo vidvamsham api karshati. One should not allow oneself to sit on the same seat, even when one's own mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that even one is very advanced in knowledge, he may be attracted by sex. Purport. Learning the etiquette of how to deal with women does not free one from sexual attraction. As specifically mentioned herewith, such attraction is possible even with one's mother, sister, or daughter. Generally, of course, one is not sexually attracted to his mother, sister, or daughter, but if one allows himself to sit very close to such a woman, one may be attracted. This is a psychological fact. It may be said that one is liable to be attracted if he is not very advanced in civilized life. However, as specifically mentioned here, vidvamsham apikarshati, even if one is highly advanced materially or spiritually, he may be attracted by lusty desires. The object of attraction may even be one's mother, sister, or daughter. Therefore, one should be extremely careful in dealings with women. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was most strict in such dealings, especially after he accepted the sannyas order. Indeed, no woman could come near him to offer him respect. Again, one is warned herewith that one should be extremely careful in dealings with women. A brahmachari is forbidden even to see the wife of a spiritual master if she happens to be young. The wife of the spiritual master may sometimes take service from the disciple of her husband, as she would from a son. But if the wife of the spiritual master is young, a brahmachari is forbidden to render service to her. Right. So still, it's just comments on the same verse. It's just standard. In other words, what Manu is giving is just standard, the culture. So every other shastra, every other aspect, it's not that there's different cultures, right? There's one culture. That's what you're saying, the Brahminical culture. There's not Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, and this and that. No, there's one culture. There's different occupations. And there may be using that one Brahminical lifestyle and those four occupations, you may have various goals you want to attain. Someone the heavenly planet, someone the Brahman, someone through following of various restrictions, someone by not restricting, someone by all these. Does that make sense? So that's where all the various paths are. But the lifestyle, there's not various lifestyles. There's only one lifestyle. Right? We'll say, oh no, but the kings, it's just they have more money. If anybody had money, they'd live like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that their nature of their occupation affords more the facility that is used, but it's not that the lifestyle changes. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the king goes into the bathroom, he'll wash his feet. The Brahmin goes into the bathroom, he'll wash his feet. But it's just that, you know, the Brahmin may be out there with a little well and a little bucket and all that, and the king has a big marble bathroom and that and servants, and you know, but whatever, the same culture is there. Right? Because we take it that the forms and the activities of those forms are the actual substance, therefore we think there's so much difference. But it's not, it's the principle that's the same. The forms are just according to what facility you have. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Yeah, so that's the principle, is he should be careful. Because if she's very young, you know, but if you know, she's you know, how you say, would be older, you know, like that, so it would be a natural relationship with mother, he might render services just like her own son would, right? But if she's younger, you know, let's say he's in his, you know, in his early 20s, she's in her teens, then he wouldn't, you know. Does that make sense? Yes.
It seems that in our movement, that the teachers, they have some special protection issues, because
no, it's not the contact with females that it's talking about here. Here means you don't want to take it to the extreme that it's saying females. It's saying being alone. That's because if there's other people there, then you don't necessarily look at it that there's an opportunity for anything. But if there's alone, then we have to look at the field and see opportunity. Does that make sense? So therefore, dealing with the women, others are there, this and that, depends on the kind of situations you're in. That's not so much the problem. You know, especially here, talking brahmacharis, Brahmins, sannyasis, vanaprastas, you know, of Brahminical nature, there's not as much restriction for them. Technically, in the Vedic, we'll find as we go, the most restriction is actually on grihasthas. Because the grihastha has the idea that enjoying women is my right. So therefore, in the situation he might be in, he'll be looking at it like that. Well, these others, it's not their right, so they don't look for it. But they still have to be careful, because you could fall into the trap of looking for it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like it's very common. Grihastha man and a woman, even though they're not husband and wife, can sit someplace alone for hours and talk and no one will say anything. Right? But the point is this point is for everybody. It's being mentioned in the Brahmachari ashram, as we said before, is because the Brahmachari is celibate, so he's the most careful around women. Right? Because he doesn't have any duty. Here, if he's really young, then he's like the son, so then if he's doing services like this, that's okay. But otherwise, then the Brahmachari doesn't have any dealings with women. Like that. But the principle is the same. It doesn't matter if one's a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. The principle is the same. But since they're known for you bringing out the elements of celibacy, therefore it's explained here in the Brahmachari ashram. But like the Vanaprastha and the Sannyasi are also celibate. But it's not being brought out in those ashrams. Because it's based on this. Right? Brahmacharya, the rules are here. Then you're adding into that the element of the Vanaprastha's studies, his teaching, or the Sannyasi's travels, his preaching. But you're adding that onto this basis. Right? But the Grihastha ashram is also based on this. Because then as we'll see in that, this is what, two, right? So in chapter three, then we're going to see, right? Chapter three is marriage, right? Chapter three, then we'll see marriage and this and that. So then it explains if the householder is only approaching his wife for you know, according to the rules, for having children, he's as good as a brahmachari. So he's called the Grihastha Brahmachari. That's the words used. Right? So, you know, he's careful how he deals. Does this make sense? It doesn't reduce the social interaction. What is reduced is the opportunities for sexual interaction. You know what I'm saying? The Western culture doesn't afford much. You know, it's just like I forget whose house we were at, but we were going to some other place from one part of England to another. We stopped at someone's house. And, you know, we're up on the second floor. That's the room we were staying in. And I was looking out the window. You know, and it's quite, you know, small. You have the house, and there's not much before the sidewalk and all that. And then I saw this, you know, young mother going by. And she had the pram and the baby inside. And, you know, she was in her high heels, tight pants, super tight tank top. You know, I mean, she was like, you know, ready for the disco. You know, she was like, you know, but pushing the pram. I'm just thinking, okay. So if someone presents like this, what are the options of interaction? You know, depending on where you are in the world, like if, like in America, you call a lady ma'am, she might get upset with you. She might become angry. You know, I'm not an old lady. Why are you talking like that, you know? So you don't unless the culture is more developed, then you have elements where there is social interaction that's not the edge of flirting. You know? I know about other parts, like you're kind of like you're educated, you know, therefore into slightly intellectual, middle class, or even upper middle class, like American, how you say, culture, is the men and women, though they're not husband and wife, can lightly flirt, but you never do anything about it. You don't take it anywhere. It was just that fun to add some little spice, you know. And so we were saying in your standard formal dinner settings, you know, you have these long tables, right? You know, and it's always set up man, woman, man, woman, man, woman. Always. And then opposite, wherever the man was, that's where the woman is. And that's man, woman, man, woman. So it's creating the maximum amount of interaction. If you're at the, you know, at a ball, you can dance with someone else's wife or some other lady. Because it's formal. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing's geared in this way. But the Vedic, it's that if all women are mother, that means mother is a matter of respect. So therefore, you automatically, you have a relationship with your mother. That means you technically have a relationship with any woman. But it's based on that. So it's actually more broad. We're looking at it, the Vedic actually narrows. It actually broadens, because if you remove the sexual aspect, it opens up a whole range of interaction. But as soon as you introduce the sexual, it reduces down the interaction. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, famous things, no matter where it is, that the Westerners can figure out how to have sex, you know, like that. But if you travel around India, you figure out Indians, that's not what they do. It's wherever they are, doesn't matter the situation, they can figure out how to eat. Yeah. You know, you're sitting there on the train, you're starving to death, and they pull out this whole meal with this and that, and everybody's sitting around, and it's a whole party going on. You know, they're eating better on the train than, you know, we might eat back at home. You know, like that.
Luckily, often they're very generous.
No, the thing is that, let's say if you're going to go somewhere and take something to eat, you know, you're going to take just how much will just get you by, or you take extra?
Yeah, they would take very much extra.
Let's say you're going someplace. You know, you don't know exactly what will happen. Mm. And you know that, let's say, you could go there and do all that, and 1,000 rupees would do everything. But would you take 1,000 rupees?
Take more.
Yeah, you take more. How much more?
2,000.
2,000. Okay, some would take 5, some would take 10. Right? You know, because you don't know what will happen. Yeah. So therefore, it's the same with food.
Yeah.
So therefore, they have enough, at least for 2, if not 3 times the amount of what's there, and then whoever's there, then they share that with them, you know.
It's very nice.
Yeah, so it works. So that's the thing, is they have, or it's like, I think it was, one devotee was telling me he was in charge of the guest house, and Prabhupada's family came. So he asked Prabhupada, and there were 20 people. So he asked Prabhupada, you know, how many rooms should we give? Prabhupada looked at him, 1. He says, but it's 20 people. He says they don't need privacy. You know, they're not going to do something wrong. You know? so, they'll all fit in 1 room, you know. You know, you put mattresses on the floor, and you have the beds and the seats, and, you know, it's a whole, that's like, you know, it's like a sleepover, you know, it's a party, like that. So it's fun. So this thing is that we have to understand is that these are all the rules that are dealing with anything that can go wrong. Remember, this is a list of laws. So when you're dealing with a list of laws, you deal with every aspect of it so that there's nothing left uncovered. Right? It doesn't mean that necessarily any of that you'll even come across in your lifetime. Or very often. Like all the laws we'll get to with the kings. All the rules. Like that. In the, I think it's 18, yeah, the 18 various categories of law. Some of those you may never come across in your whole life. But you have to know them, because if you do, you know what to do. So everything is there. That's why Manu gets scary. Is because every aspect, so it looks like, oh, it's just on that. No, that's just when you're dealing in that area. This is everything to know about that subject. Right? About that social aspect. You know that, then you're prepared. Does that make sense?
So no room for taboos. No room for taboos. If there's a taboo, then it will be in the manual.
Yeah, yeah. Means everything is there. Means what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing. You know, in other words, this is the complete social science. Right? The mechanics of it. You know, the real purpose of the social science is to be able to connect this to Krishna. Right? Because you're going to socially interact with other living entities, so you should be able to interact in a way that's pleasing to the Lord and do that for the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So the problem is not with the brahmachari, the problem is not with the women, the problem is not with anything. The problem is that how to be Krishna conscious. Right? Does that make sense? Because the four regulative principles, the reason they're a problem is they're extremely distracting. You know what I'm saying? To the point where you have to have, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I think, I don't know what they call it, but basically Sex Anonymous, you know, all these different things, people gambling and, you know, like that. Generally, there's not one thing, no, yes, I am a meat eater. You know. Like that, you know, so I don't think that they have the 12 steps to, you know.
To vegetarianism.
Yeah, to vegetarian. I haven't heard that, you know. Yeah.
Maybe that's a business opportunity then.
Yeah, it's actually at least a social opportunity.
Yeah, that's,
you know. Okay, do we catch this? Because you have to be very careful. This is not for, you know, going like this, because at a later date you'll see it'll go the other way. You know, say, all these things that go, you know, fired up like that. But at one point it's going to say that of all the ashrams, the grihastha is the best. You know, right? Why? Because they're the ones that maintain all the other three. The point is to go back to Godhead, you need facilities, the grihasthas do that. Therefore, without the grihasthas, because if there's no grihasthas, would there be brahmacharis?
No, where would they come from?
Yes, so that's the point, right? And if there's no grihasthas, where would you get the vanaprasthas and sannyasis? Right? So therefore, the central feature in the Vedic social system is the grihasthas. Because basically speaking, all these rules, you know, this is the second, right? No, this is first and second?
Chapter 2.
Yeah, it means what I have here.
Oh, you have first.
Yeah, so that means this is the first two chapters, and it just keeps going. So it's about that fat, you know? So basically, you know, we're almost at the end of the brahmachari stuff, another couple of pages, and we're done. And that's it. Right, and the beginning of that was also about some stars and about the quality of the teacher and everything like that. So that's it. Right? Sannyasi will be half a chapter. Mm-hmm. Like that. So basically you put together one full chapter. You know? Or one and a half chapters as it stands here, two chapters are concerning the brahmacharis, the vanaprasthas, the sannyasis. Two chapters. That means, and then one is the philosophy, the beginning. So that means the other nine that are left, that's for grihasthas. Right? One ashram gets nine chapters, right? And three ashrams, you know, don't even necessarily get a full chapter each. That's unfair. You know what I'm saying? So the point is all these are there because the social system has to be very exact to make sure you get the right result, you know? Does that make sense?
Is it also that they'd be asking the majority?
But just because there's more or less, that doesn't make more rules. Right? Whether there's one couple or whether there's 100, the rules are the same. Does that make sense? That doesn't change like that. It's because you're dealing with, like you have a bunch of brahmacharis, they may annoy each other, but it's not actually very volatile. You know what I'm saying? But the grihastha ashram, it's like the Brahma Samhita, every word, you know, is possible, you know, ecstasy or, you know, despair. You know, every tone of voice, every movement, every action, you know. Is that, you know what I'm saying? Like that. So you have to have much more rules to see that everything goes properly. But those rules are only to keep in place these principles. You catch the principle, the rules are easy. But if you don't, it's just like, let's say, if you teach someone the science of cooking, you don't have to teach them any recipes. You know, it means you use a few just so they learn the science. Once they've learned, they can cook unlimited things. You don't need recipes. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that you teach the principles of what the Vedic culture is giving. You don't have to, then all the rules aren't, they're not foreboding because you understand the principle that is what it's doing. So it's not a problem at all. So they're easy to follow. They're not a distraction. So if you don't know the principle, then it's just so many, like how many recipes can you memorize? Right? But if you understand the principle of cooking, then you don't have to have any recipes memorized. Does that make sense? You can cook. You can just see things, you can put it together. Is that irrelevant? Okay. In some circles, that will be an absolutely irrelevant example, because they wouldn't know how to boil water. So,
Maharaj, in preaching, that principle is so very interesting. Once you catch the principle, the Vedas are cooking.
Yeah.
Even though you may not have memorized so many verses.
No, but you know what to do.
Connect.
Yeah, you know how to behave, because you know what you're looking for. In other words, in all these things, like the Brahmacharya ashram here, the point is respect. So that means the respect for anybody else is your main principle, right? What is Lord Chaitanya saying? two out of four aspects of the etiquette, the essential etiquette he gives, is respect. Not giving respect to others, not expecting for yourself. And then humility and tolerance. Then you can do that. Right? And if you can do those four, you can always chant. So we're interested in always chanting. So therefore these other four has been. So always respecting. So if you always respect, you'll always deal nicely. Right? You know, the men are rough with the women. Why? There's no respect. They might have more respect for the car. You know, it's new, it's shiny, you know. You know, no one should lean on it, you know, like that. Hey, get her, you know. You know how it goes. They first bring home the car like that. You know, no one can even go near it, you know, like that. You know, and after it's, you know, been around a while, someone's, you know, somebody dropped their, you know, how you say, drink on that in the back seat, and, you know, like that, and one of the hubcaps fell off, then it doesn't matter. Right? But there, so the point is no respect. So if there's respect, there's always proper dealing. So if there's improper dealing between men and women because there's no respect. And by the Vedic standard, how would there be no respect? How could you have a situation? Because Grihastha Ashram is founded on Brahmacharya. Right? And so any skill means you have to respect what you're dealing with. You don't respect your car, you crash. Right? Because it has what it can do and what it can't do. You can't just do whatever you want and then the car is supposed to respond. So why would people be like that? So if you don't respect, then you don't get a proper reaction. So most of the time, people getting bad reactions in relationships is because they don't actually understand the principle of respect.
Sometimes I feel that brahmacharis who don't catch that principle within the ashram, when they move to grihastha, they can't.
No, they're bad, because they're bad brahmacharis, so they're bad grihasthas. A good brahmachari is the one who is just naturally a brahmachari. He's just very pleasant and comfortable as a brahmachari. So therefore, if he's in the room with women or not in the room with women, it doesn't matter to him. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you're very practiced at fasting, right? So then you can help in the kitchen or help with the boga offering or, you know, some arrangements for guests. You have no problem because you don't have a problem. If there's food there or not, you'll fast. But now let's say you have someone who has great difficulty fasting. They would have a lot of trouble being around food. You know, so how are they going to deal around food? Right? Not, we don't want to do any of that, or they're rough, or I'm not doing this, or, you know, I can't do that, and I won't, you know, you understand? So just replace the word food and ladies, and what do you got?
Reality.
Yeah, reality. Not so great brahmacharis. So not so great brahmacharis make not so great grihasthas. Good brahmacharis make good grihasthas. Why? Because they already have the basis of sense control, respect, work ethic, know how to, you know, properly dress, they're clean. Like, what is the wife harassing the husband about? His standards of cleanliness, right? How he dresses, how he behaves, he's lazy. Right? You understand? He doesn't, you know, understand the proper etiquettes. He doesn't listen very well, right? The brahmachari listens well, because, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So the point is if he already knew all these things as a brahmachari, then it would make grihastha life so much easier. Right? It means if you're already submissive, then applying submission into a domestic environment, that domesticate, is not a big step, right? Because that means there would be the thing, no, but, you know, the man is, you know, leading, the wife is, I mean, but the point is no, the man is following his guru. It still remains the same. The brahmachari is following the order of guru. The grihasthi is following the order of guru. Just now he has the responsibility to help others in their service to their guru. Does that make sense? So then it's how you deal with them. Just like, let's say the man is, okay, he is the president of the country, right? And he's there with his family. And his, you know, baby has to go to the toilet. Right? But he's the president. So therefore, you know, the baby should understand. Right? And wait for the appropriate moment. Does it work like that? Yeah, get veto. Because you know, the Speaker of the House said, our next on our agenda is the president wants to veto his child going to the bathroom halfway through the movie. Do we have any discussion on this?
Okay. I didn't get the memo.
Yeah, so does that make sense? So he has to take care, his baby has to go to the bathroom. That's it. Doesn't matter who he is. So that's the point, is that we think, no, I'm the big guy. You're the big guy in Varna. But in ashram, you're a brahmachari, you're submissive. You're grihasta, you're submissive. You're vanaprastha, you're submissive. You're sannyasi, you're submissive. There's no question of anything other than submission. Right? In Varna, you're the big guy. He's the king. He's the big pandit. He's the big businessman. That's in Varna. That's not in ashram. Mm-hmm. Right? I think it's Kulashekar even says so. I think it's, no, not Kulashekar. It's Kulashekar, and there's this another king. Maybe Yamunacharya. Alabandhu. One of them. He's making the point is that he sits in his court and he's the, you know...
Quraysh.
Huh?
Quraysh.
Quraysh, he mentions this point. Yeah. He sits in the court and he is... But Quraysh was a king? No.
He was a king. He was a disciple of Ramanacharya.
Quraysh was a king?
Yeah, he was a king.
Oh, I didn't know he was a king. Okay. So he's making the point that you sit in the court... And you're making judgments of life and death over the people that are there. Like that. You have absolute, complete control. But when I leave the court and walk into the inner chambers where the women of the house, then I have to bow my head in submission, you know. Like that. So it's just the way it works. You know. So that's the point. That's the difference between Varna and ashram. Ashram, there's only one etiquette. Varna, you have all these different things because it's economics, it's social, it's all these, so you have to be able to pull them all together. Does this make some sense? Right. Yes.
So it appears that the modern, you know, ladies and men, they have, you know, basically no chance to be together because they're not trained at all. And there's no wonder that people divorcing, you know, left and right.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's natural. It means by karma, then you find some have a, you know, it works well for them. But it's just karma. They don't know what they're doing. They just somehow or another it works for them.
Karma between the two?
Karma means from their previous life, they probably acted properly, so some of that's still left in this life, so they deal properly. So it still works. But you can't guarantee how many lifetimes that'll last. You know what I'm saying? Without the knowledge. You know, it's just like you have the person, he deals properly with ladies, no matter what. You know, and is not bothered by them, no matter what happens. But he doesn't know that that's something you should do, no one's trained him, it's just left from previous life. So he must have had very good training previously, that this lifetime he still has that one pious aspect. Does that make sense? So you will find that there is something working. So, but you'll check all those people that it is working is because they're actually following the law. They don't know it, but they're following. And all those people that it's failing is because they're breaking the law. Does that make sense? So it'll always... Okay? See a lot of cogs going on.
No, because I'm thinking between karmic people, it's only their own relationship, but with the devotees, because we're not born, some of us born, some of us not born in the tradition, then the spirituality is like a second layer, which we don't know either. We don't know Okay. That makes it even more difficult.
On one level, but the point is if one can understand the spiritual, it already includes the material. Because, in other words, the philosophy already includes the social system. Because the social system, culture is the application of philosophy. Right? But we take it that it's culture is only going to an opera or, you know, what you put, you know, what's in yogurt or something. You know, like that kind of a thing. You know, or
that you put on the earth to,
yeah, like that, or you, yeah, what you stick into the vat with all the how you say, you know, whatever it is you're bubbling up in there to make a drink out of, or, you know, if you leave out the L, then, you know, it's fashion, you know, yeah. You know, something like that. So it's kind of
close enough.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of same. Yeah.
Ballpark.
Yeah. But the thing is culture is everything about your life, what you do, that's based on, you know, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So if you understand Krishna consciousness, the culture goes easier. And the culture goes easier if you understand the philosophy. That's why they're both culture cultivated. So that's why we have this parallel, you know, that we're, you know, been able to, how you say, reintroduce, you know, in official capacity, this line of the philosophy and the culture going, being taught, both taught like that. Because then we see, because the other philosophy, okay, great, that's there, makes sense, but then we go to apply it in the life, then, so this then gives where to look, how to. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the idea is ultimately from the philosophy is everything is feminine. There's nothing that you're actually looking at that you can see with the senses that's masculine. Right? It's all Krishna's energy, which is feminine. And so the living entity, the tendency is to enjoy the feminine nature. You see the situation, all the forms are feminine. All the activities you could do with those forms are feminine. Right? And then one will try to enjoy that. So one will look, scope the situation and see, what could I do to enjoy myself? So that is, means you're, in other words, you're alone with your situation and you're trying to see how to gain, you know, some kind of pleasure out of that. It's the same principle, that's the philosophical point, is that the living entity has to give up the idea that I am the enjoyer of nature. Right, because it's God's nature. So anything I see, I would see opportunities to use it in Krishna's service. Okay? Does that make sense in general? Now, let us take it to the point we were making before about the intensity of something. Right? Now, of all material energy that one could get the maximum amount or broadest range of enjoyment from, what's going to be the form of that?
Woman.
Because anything else in the situation is connected. You know what I'm saying? The relationship goes with the woman nicely, the whole field is nice. And if it doesn't go nicely, then the whole field's not nice. Right? We'll come up with those verses, so they'll be exact verses saying. You know? Does that make sense? So therefore, that's why so much focus is put on there. But it's not that it's directed at women. It's directed at the principle of the living entity taking the mood of the Purusha and wanting to enjoy God's creation, which is feminine. He wants to take the masculine principle to enjoy the feminine. But it's for anything.
But actually, it's feminine dealing with feminine. Is it?
Yes, because we're feminine who thinks we're masculine, but we're actually feminine, and we're not even just feminine, in fact, we're junior feminine. So, what means we're 1/10,000 the tip of the hair, right? In manifestation, internal potency is 3/4 of unlimited, and material external potency is 1/4 of unlimited, right? So 1/4 of unlimited, 3/4 of unlimited. And 1/10,000 the tip of the hair, and you're not going to get any bigger eternally. right? You know what I'm saying? So, is it a surprise that we would have to naturally take the submissive position? Like, let's say, you know, I walk into my kitchen, there's a fresh loaf of bread there, and there's a nice shiny new toaster. Okay? So, what do I decide? I want to enjoy the bread. Right? So, I, the Lord and Master of all I survey, and right now I'm surveying this bread, right? And the toaster, I'm going to put the bread into the toaster and make it into toast. Right? And then this way, enjoy life. Right? Okay? So, now, I'm thinking I'm doing this as the Master. But actually, how am I doing this? You have to serve, because you can't just pick up the bread, you can't just pick up the loaf and jam it in there. You know, you can't put it in the toaster and say, toast. I, the Lord of this house and Master of all I survey, say you should toast. No, you have to do the service of pushing the thing down and making sure it's plugged in. So you have to give all facility to the toaster to do its job. So your job is assisting the toaster in its service of toasting the bread. I hope I'm not ruining your day.
So the toaster is more masculine than we are.
Yeah, because the toaster could do anything. You could pick it up and swing it around and throw it out the window. You can do all kinds of things. So toasting is one thing it can do. So actually, it's in the masculine position. Yes, so it's in the senior position. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that with everything.
So we're being enjoyed by the toaster.
Yeah, we're being enjoyed by the toaster. Gets freaky. That's why the going into this much detail on an extended amount is generally a common ground of discussion amongst, you know, on the sannyas platform. But in other ashrams, it's just touched upon only when things get a little bit too wild. When somebody's ego gets too big, then you pull these ones out. But otherwise, you don't. But this is the common platform, you know, for looking at. That it means if you want a nice karmia, this is the world. Right? Because it's that means there's nothing to enjoy, you're simply serving everything. You know, but socially you may be in a senior position. You know. That means you can pick up the toaster and move it from this counter to that counter, you know. Yes.
Well, we say that we are so small and tiny. The inner spark is so small and tiny, but it always gets some quirkiness, bigger.
Yes.
So
you even need assistance to move around those coatings. So that's why we're saying here is even on the body, we simply desire, but it's material nature that carries it out. So we're actually only assisting in the activities of material nature. It means they're running according to our desire. But it's like, the point is that the toaster toasts, that the modes of nature take care of. So we can assist the material energy as the material cause. You know, as the operational cause, we can take part in the process, but we don't toast the toast. The toaster toasts the toast. But the thing is you eat it? No, it means that the mouth and the teeth and the tongue, the stomach, everything does all that. You get the sensual involvement, experience of enjoyment, but you don't actually do any of that. You're only taking part in it.
It's like in a movie.
Yeah. It's like in a movie.
And also,
yeah, so that's the point. Get used to understanding that's as good as it gets.
It also makes you bear down on everything because you kind of carry the weight and whatever you desire something, somebody else does it, so it makes you like in a wheelchair. You can't do much.
You can't do... No, but see, this is why this is not brought out too much, because it's very freaky to grihasthas, because they can do whatever they like, they're independent, they're the Lord and Masters of everything, so it gets a little freaky.
For the Brahmacharis, it's easier?
There's no attachment, so it's not yours. See, it's only a problem if it's yours. If it's yours, you want to be able to do with it as you like. But if it's not yours, you have to do with it as you're supposed to do with it. It means it's not yours, so what is it supposed to do? Right? It means the temple car is there, and it's not yours, so what is it for? You take it and go out of the Sankirtan, go on a program, that's it.
But,
huh? No, that's another thing. But the point is because that's because they also don't understand really that it's God, so you take care of it, right? In other words, the temple car should look better than everybody else's, right? But at the same time, but the grihastha, he can drive to the temple. He could go out in Sankirtan. He could also drive to see his relatives. He could go out, you know, on a vacation. He could go to a movie. He could go to a restaurant. He has so many things. So that's why these things aren't, you don't see this aspect coming out much. You'll get it coming out a bit in the chapter on sannyas, and you'll get it coming out a bit in the 12th chapter. So you'll have, you know, a very minimal amount, because you don't want to spin anybody out, you know, like that. In other words, you have to keep them inspired that you can by engaging yourself in Krishna consciousness, be successful. You know, which is actually what you're doing, because all these details aren't really important. You know what I'm saying? But they become important when we're very, but I'm doing this. Then we have to point out, no, you're not. Or we have to leave it and say, you're doing a great job and Hari Bol. But then don't come to the class. You know, we'll tell you that on the road when you're feeling bad, you know, like that. But the idea is that we are under an illusion that we're controlling and doing everything, when all it is that we're desiring a super soul through the material nature it's being organized. You know what I'm saying? But the point is like you said with the movie, it's not actually a problem. Because you just sit there and do nothing, and the whole movie goes, and you're, you know, absorbed in the experiences or the drama or whatever it is. And you feel that something's happened, you've been part of something. Because the point is you want to feel part of something. It's not what you do, it's whether you feel part of it. It's the masculine thing is that I want to do something, get a result. It's the feminine thing is that I want to be involved in something so that I get an experience. So the point is, as long as you get the experience, the living entity is happy. Does that make sense? So, therefore, we are, if we assist the material nature, an illusion, we're bound, we're not happy, we assist the internal potency, you know, favorably towards Krishna, then we're happy. But the point is no one worries about the detail. So therefore, you are doing so many things. You know, it's like Arjuna, if we look at it by actual philosophical point, did Arjuna win the war?
No,
he was an instrument. Before it even happened, there's just sitting there before the battle, and you know, sitting between the armies, and Krishna already showed him, I've already killed everybody here. But you can be an instrument and take part. But how does it work? Now, when we think of Arjuna, who do we think of? Yeah, the warrior, but the hero of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Because the point is even though it's Krishna's potency that's doing everything, that we're involved in it, then we get the credit. You understand? So on the spiritual platform, you get the credit, and it's devotional. On the material platform, you get the credit, and you get, you know, bound up in illusion. Does that make sense? So it's not a problem, because the jiva is an assistant. See, if we just acknowledge that I am a servant, that's it, finish, then it becomes very easy. No? It's when we think we're something else, then there's always a fight. But then the point is the governor is just a servant. Like Ramananda Rai, he was the governor of for the Maharaj Pratapurudra. So at that time, you know, Orissa, you know, I guess part of Andhra, Tamil Nadu, a lot of that area, that was all he was the governor of. So he managed it. He does the day-to-day hands-on management. So how powerful he is. But he's a Shudra. He's just an assistant to the king. You know what I'm saying? So the point is being an assistant doesn't mean that you don't have a lot of facility or power or influence. It just means that while you're doing it, it's not for you. Like, you know, the bank manager, you know, he may have millions of dollars under his control, but none of it's his. He's simply a servant of that banking business. What do you say? Does that make sense? So it's not his. So it doesn't mean that you can't be, you know, does that make sense? Even your modern political, say, your democracy, the person, you're the president of the country, you're the first citizen. So you're a servant to the state. But very powerful. Does that make sense? So we don't have to worry that being a servant means, you know, nothing gets done and we just have to sit around and, you know, wait for it to happen. No, it means that we're doing whatever's our nature, we engage that. But we see that it's engaged for Krishna. Does that work? Yes.
So when we say people have power, it's actually their capacity to serve we're talking about.
Yeah, their capacity that much power can be channeled through them.
Without things going wrong.
Yeah, it means yeah, that's what it is. It's just like, let us say, I have a hose, right? A certain amount of water, it has a potency, a certain amount of water can flow through it. But a creek, more water can flow. A river, more water. You understand? It's its capacity for that. So when we say nature, we're talking about what it can do. So therefore, knowledge, you know, influence, money, or art can be manifest through that person's endeavor. You know, that's what we're talking about. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of what it is. So it's still God's potency that's manifesting. So it's like we're using the Ganga water to offer back to the Ganga. So it's the Lord's potency we're offering back. Because there is only God. There's nothing else to work with but God. Even we're parts and parcels of God. So it's not that, well, no, I don't know if I'm using whatever's mine. There isn't such a thing. No. But the point is, in a sense, there's no problem with that. You know what I'm saying? The really rich man, he has a big house, all kinds of facilities. He doesn't mind his close friends using that facility. You know, or even, you know, hey, I'll get us something to eat. He goes into the kitchen. What's he bringing back? He's bringing back that rich person's food. But there is, oh, you bought that for me, great. You know, it's like, it's, you know what I'm saying?
So that's when we reach the Anandamaya state, we can get all facilities because...
I mean, it's all facilities because the facilities are not seen to be for ourselves. That's what I was saying. You have pure devotion, so it's up to a very great level. But pure unalloyed, then it goes into another realm because there's absolutely no desire on one's own part for anything. You only want Krishna's pleasure. So, therefore, you can be entrusted with, you know, the absolute total of opulence. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah.
The other side of that 10,000 of people who are here is when you contemplate how much endeavor Krishna puts in having a relationship with these 10,000 people.
Yeah. I mean, he's the size of a thumb. So what's 1,000, 10,000 of the tip of the hair? So someone that big is worried about something so small. There you go. So that's that's the point, is that he, it's because of his affection for the living entity that he comes with them, he makes all this arrangement and all this. So for him, it's not a problem that it's his energy, you know, and that you feel I'm doing something with it. That's not his problem. His problem is that you're leaving him out of it when it's his. You know? And the natural relationship is with him. You know, you want to share, you share with him. You know? And everybody's connected to him. That way, then you can share with others. But if you see it that I'm sharing with others and he's not part of it, how anybody will be satisfied? If we're part and parcel of God, how will be satisfied if we share between ourselves and he's not included? But if we share it with God, everybody will be happy. Or if we see everybody in relationship to God, then we can share with others because then he's included. You know, that's the whole point. Yes.
Maharaj, before you mentioned about the philosophy and the culture and cultural application of philosophy, so in this kind of view, the philosophy is more appreciated than the cultural application.
Yes.
Is that due to some prejudice? I mean, cultural prejudice?
Yeah, I would say there would be that element. Is that it depends. It means if one's from a background where you have, there is some concept of culture, then it's less of a problem. But if you've come from a background that culture is not very important, or practicality is, you know, so some aspects, like I've seen, you know, it just depends where you're from. Europeans can appreciate it a bit more than, let's say, the Anglo-Saxons. But at the same time, it's depending on where they're from, then they may appreciate more or less. So, like, say you have rural people, they'll be, you know, more personal and more interactive and more sharing, but not necessarily very sophisticated. Like that, you know, your city people are sophisticated, but not necessarily very deep in their interaction. Does that make sense? Or, you know, a funny thing, not necessarily present day New York, but previous New Yorkers would be, they're very pragmatic, but sometimes they can appreciate culture, but they don't let culture get in the way of pragmatism. But if it doesn't get in the way, they very much appreciate it. While other parts I've seen sometimes is that, no, the pragmatism is only, and the culture doesn't really matter. You know, unless you've come from a family that valued culture. You know, but the New Yorker, whether you came from a family like that or not, you may be from a rough and ready, but they all appreciate it. You know, you could talk about, you know, a Broadway show with a taxi driver, and he could appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? But anywhere else means it had to be that, you know, the family would appreciate these things. They would go to dramas or go to this or listen to music or, you know, had some value like that. Then there would be, you know, some kind of formal social element, you know, like that. You know, it's like when I was a kid, is that, you know, when you went to a formal program, everybody had kids. You never heard any, you didn't hear the kids. They were there with their parents and they were taking part and they were, you know, they, and people would put a lot of attention into them. You know, that they got, you know, what they needed and, you know, got food and everything like that. But it was never a scene. The kids were never the scene. Yeah, at home maybe, but not in public forum. But nowadays, it's just, the kids don't have any concept of this. You know, so, you know, where's the culture? And then you grow up, it's all about yourself. You know? Does that make sense? So it's a problem. So it kind of got lost. I think the generation before the last one, then there was more appreciation of the culture. But then the next one, you know, it's not about the culture, it's about oneself. You know, they even have the nomenclature, the me generation. It's about them. That's what you call that whole generation, the me generation. Because it's just about themselves. So, the thing is, by intelligence, you can learn to appreciate. When you see the value of it, and then apply it and see and are convinced, then you can do it. It'll work. Or, even if you don't, if you can somehow or another practice the direct activities of Krishna consciousness and not offend the devotees, despite a total lack of culture, you still go back to Godhead. You understand? But you have to avoid offending devotees.
So the respect element would be the basic cultural element which would prevent.
Yeah, respect is the thing, because if the respect is there, but then to do that you have to cultivate humility and tolerance. But if respect is there, then you'll deal properly. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, let's say even you have the rough street guy, but if you deal with him with proper respect, mm-hmm. he'll respond mm-hmm. very nicely. You know, if you always deal with him like that, no one in the area will bother you. Mm. Why? Because he'll make sure no one does. Mm. Because you deal properly. You know, it's the others who look at, oh, they're all criminals, or all this, or all low life. So therefore, then they don't have any relationship. If you deal with him properly, then they'll respond properly. Does that make sense? It's just how it works. Okay. Okay. But at his pleasure, a young student may prostrate himself on the ground before the young wife of the teacher in accordance with the rule and say, I am such and such. I worship the old lady. In other words, he doesn't offer any personal services. He may not touch her feet, but he can offer obeisances on the ground whenever he finds it suitable. That's not a problem. It's not that he's not respectful in dealings and all that. He just doesn't deal with these kind of intimate aspects. On returning home from a journey, he must clasp the feet of his teacher's wife and daily salute her in the manner just mentioned. Remember the duty of the virtuous. So in other words, every day he respects her, right? And upon returning from a journey, then he'll go out of the way to see that, like we see Krishna when he's going, like that. He'll there'll be all the Pandavas and this and that and all the different things and all the big guys like that. Then next is?
Females.
Yeah, the women. Then he'll go into the inner chain, say goodbye to all the ladies. Then he'll go out, then it'll be the public. And then he'll leave. Right? So therefore this aspect is, on coming or going, then there's that specific respect. But it says, remembering the duty of the virtuous. So in other words, how to properly behave. But still that respect is there. So see, you understand what the problem is? What we'll come across? If devotees generally would go through this, what would they pick out? Right? These last ones wouldn't be picked out.
No.
First ones, women and my this, yeah, that. Yeah. You wouldn't have the thing as no, but you, despite that, you have to be respectful. You have to deal properly. You have to understand nature of women. So therefore, if that is, that feelings of emotions are stronger, therefore you have to stay. Right? You have to deal properly. Right? That means the remembering the duty of the virtuous. Mm. Right? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki, Sarvavita Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Jai Gaur Premanandini.